Okay, we're just coming up on 7:30, so I'd like to welcome all to the December 21st Q&A, second last one of the season. We do plan on having one next week, so if people are around or if you're iced in or something like that, as long as you got electricity, why not join us? As long as Alan and I have electricity and can run the Q&A, we'll see how it goes. Okay, so once again, welcome all. Just a note here, breaking news on membership, just at the board meeting last night. The board voted to extend memberships for yet another year for all members in good standing as of March 31st. You'll have your membership expiry date extended by 1 year for no charge. Please don't send in a membership renewal fee. And if there are any new people, or if you know anybody who could be a potential member, there's a deal on now, like we've had in the last 2 years, where if you join by March 31st, 2023, you'll get 2 years for the price of one, $20. So real good deal. And so I'm going to mute all. And everybody, as always, does have the ability to unmute themselves. Please feel free to do so. Please remute yourself afterwards so we keep background noise to a minimum. And with that, I will kick it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck.
Okay, thanks, Chris, and welcome, everyone. Okay, we have a few different items tonight, and I'm going to start off with one on ghostwriting. And if you recall, a while ago, Chris was showing us how this DALL-E 2 program used artificial intelligence and created unique pictures. And it turns out that there's an equivalent program that will do the same thing for text. And Chris found this from his buddy Bruce Schneier, who does a cybersecurity blog and newsletter. And Bruce had found out about this ChatGPT thing, and so he tried it out, and he wrote the question, well, he wrote the statement in the box here. He told the thing to write an essay in the style of Bruce Schneier on how ChatGPT will affect cybersecurity. And the program did its thing, and Schneier was amazed at how actually good the resulting text was. So if you're interested in trying it out, it's part of the openai.com program website. So if you go there and you'll find how to do it. And as Chris just mentioned, we have this 2-for-1 membership thing coming up again. And so we need an article for the newsletter. And rather than copy the same old text that we had last year, for example, I decided it would be fun to try this thing out. So I basically copied what Bruce wrote, and I told the thing to write me an article for the OPCUG newsletter that promotes 2-for-1 membership by March the 31st. And this is the text that resulted. And it starts off by saying, are you interested in expanding your knowledge and skills in the world of technology? The Ottawa PC User Group, OPCUG, is here to help. As a member, you'll have access to a wealth of resources, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's really quite amazing how good this thing is, considering, you know, all I told it to do was write the article for OPCUG and so forth. So it turns out there are a few issues with it. For example, it says for a limited time, you can get 2 membership for the price of 1. Well, that's not exactly what I said. I said a 2-for-1 membership. So I was thinking that you would buy 1 membership and get 2 years of membership free. Anyway, that's kind of a detail. But Chris found this other little thing. It says we have special interest groups, such as programming and Linux and digital photography. Well, we don't have special interest groups on programming, Linux, and digital photography. We have had special interest groups in the past. We certainly had one on Linux. I'm not sure whether we ever had one on programming per se. I'm not sure if we ever had one on digital photography, but we certainly don't have them now. And this thing says we also have special interest groups. So It's not exactly accurate, but it's good enough that if I were to go in and edit this thing, I could very quickly put together a really good article on that particular topic. So look out for future articles in the newsletter that are completely done by artificial intelligence. And as I said, if you want to try it out, you have to set up an account, or you can use a Google account to sign on to this thing. All it needs in terms of an account is it needs an email address from you. But once you have the account, you can go into ChatGPT. You enter your string of text in here and press the arrow key. And within seconds, you get quite a good piece of prose returned to you as a text file, or text string, I guess, on screen text, which you can then retrieve. Okay, so if anybody wants to try that, all the various links are in the deck here. And in the meantime, we were talking about stealing cars, and I think Chris has a thing on secure coding.
Yeah, so at the Q&A on December 7th, I had a slide on why secure coding is important, and was all about cars being hacked and how easily it could be done. And I was a little bit surprised at how easy it was, but next. Bruce Schneier wasn't all that surprised. And to quote from his cryptogram that came out this week, cars are just computers with four wheels and an engine. It's no surprise that the software is vulnerable and that everything is connected. And so he wasn't surprised at all. And for anybody who is interested in computer security, Bruce Schneier, he is a guru when it comes to computer security, and he puts out a monthly cryptogram newsletter that goes out by email. He has a blog on his website as well, but I find that the cryptogram newsletter is really interesting. It has generally about a paragraph of information about various stories that are in the news, including how easy it was to hack cars, and then he'll have links to both articles by him and articles by other people. So if you are interested in computer security, I really, really recommend you check out the Cryptogram monthly newsletter.
Okay, and I think the next couple of items are yours too, Chris.
Yeah, so this one really should be Stuart Bruce's. He posted this in the general member form. He was looking for an Apple Pencil an Apple Pencil for, a tablet device. And so he was looking around, and he found that the price from Apple is outrageously expensive. And I looked it up, and it's $169. Best Buy, Staples, The Source, all of them seem to be exactly the same price. But Stuart found on Amazon a Zed Speed, a second generation stylus for the iPad, and it claims to be available for all of the devices that you see listed there. And I shouldn't criticize them too much, I guess, on their English, because I'm sure my Chinese is a lot worse. But note that it not worked before of a bunch of other Apple devices. So presumably, if you pick from the list that of devices that are supported, you can get something for, what is that, about 20% or 25% of the cost of the, or less than that, of the Apple Pencil. And the reviews on Amazon look really good. So I pasted the URL to that into the chat. If you're interested, there are other Apple compatible pencils on the Amazon site at good prices. So you don't have to pay Apple's inflated prices.
Okay, and next is even cheaper.
Yeah, free stuff. So this came in from Natalie, and so she saw a post on the site, Trash Nothing, and I posted the URL to that into the chat window. Somebody was giving away 6 Raspberry Pi 1s, and unfortunately, by the time I checked, they were all gone. Not surprising, I guess, that they disappeared pretty quickly. But then I thought, well, even though that's gone, you might want to check out the site for some other free stuff. And that is the aim of the site, is that you can get rid of stuff you don't want, giving it away for free, and you can look for other things on the site that other people are giving away for free. And the URL's there. And Natalie was who brought us the attention of this item. She said she went back and she was looking at the site today, and she's actually going to put together a little bit more information for a follow-up next week on the free Trash Nothing site, and a little bit more details about how it works and what you can do on it.
Okay, thanks, Chris. I'm not surprised that the Pi 1s disappeared very quickly. It's almost impossible to buy single board computers these days. They're a victim of the global chip shortage. And in fact, some of the scalpers are selling them for 5 or 6 times what they should cost.
Wow.
But there was explaining computers, the guy did an interview with the head honcho, the CEO from Raspberry Pi, and he was saying next year they're probably going to be getting back into regular type of supply levels, so prices should be back to square one. Okay, thanks, Chris. So the next thing I have is a computer basics item, and you probably recognize this as being File Explorer. And it's kind of using the old DOS type listing, where you see the file name and the date and the size of each file. But you also know that you can use some of these icons up here to get pretty pictures. So if you, for example, if you choose the extra large icons, then you can see a whole bunch of pretty pictures. Which was Convoy 1.0 in Ottawa. However, I really like that details view, but notice that if you select details in the view menu of File Explorer, you have this button here that you can enable preview pane. And I've never actually noticed this before, but if you do that, then what happens is, anytime you select a file listing, it pops up a preview of, in this case, the image file. You can see it as a preview. So I get the best of both worlds. I can see my files and dates and sizes, but I can also see what's in the file. And the really neat thing is it's not just restricted to JPEGs. If you do it for documents, like here's a folder that has a bunch of doc files. I selected this article on OBS Studio, and you can see when I select that file, I get a preview of the text, which is really quite nice. And in fact, the same thing happens if I go to a folder which has a bunch of Excel files, and I click on one of the files here, then I can see that I've got a whole bunch of numbers in that file. And similarly, if I go to a folder that has a bunch of PowerPoint files, including the file which these slides are based on, if I select the file preview file here, you can see that it pops up a thumbnail of the first slide. So it's really quite a neat little way to have a quick and dirty view of what is in your file folder. So I think that's actually quite neat. Okay, so that was a computer basics item. And in fact, that turns out it's the last computer basics item in my pending folder. So I've got this note here that we can help you, or we can probably help you. But the problem is, we really need to know what it is that you need to know. So if you have things that you'd like us to discuss, I can't think of anything else in terms of computer basics right now, or smartphone basics, for example, or just general computer topics in as they go, operating system tweaks or programs to do this, that, or the other. If there's something which you think that we could discuss usefully, then just let us know, and we'll come back to this later on. But in the meantime, Chris has a computer base at Titan. Well, except he's muted himself.
Sorry, I'm so used to leaving it unmuted all the time that when I do mute myself, I forget. So I came across this How to Be Unscammable, and this is put out by Glue Society, which is based out in the West Coast, Canada. And I'm not sure I really believe the headline. I think anybody can be scammed given a skillful enough scammer. But some background, Glue is a Canadian nonprofit organization, as I said, based on the West Coast. And according to their website, they're focused on ensuring older adults have a better way to learn digital skills. They claim to have printed materials, online courses, live online events, workshops, volunteer training, and volunteer support. There seems to be very little there right now, but this is what they claim. And all materials are free of charge. And there's no advertising on the site. They get government funding to and some corporate sponsors that help them stay alive. So next. Oh, and I should paste this into the chat. Okay, so yeah, next. Sorry. So this email that I actually got on how to be unscammable is actually pretty neat. It's actually a series of security courses. You can get them at the Glue site or on YouTube. And there's over 3 hours spread over 10 episodes covering a whole raft of things on how to make sure that you're unscammable. And the title of each of the 10 episodes is listed there on the screen. So you can see it covers off a really wide range of things that you need to be aware of and watch out for and guard yourself against. I highly recommend it for anybody who is, considers themselves to be somewhat of a novice when it comes to securing your computer. And even those who think that they know everything there is to know about security, I would still encourage you to check it out. Maybe run it at 1.5 or double speed or something like that to get through it all. But it's actually pretty solid advice that they've got on there and a lot of very, very good information. So next. So the first bullet, main bullet, is same as I had on the previous slide there. Now, the thing is, I'm not really sure how active this organization really is. I first signed up on their website after John Fleming, one of our members, told me about this site back last February. And thanks, John, for that. I appreciate it, and I did sign up for it. And then I heard nothing from them. And it doesn't seem like there's an awful lot of activity on the site since then. However, who knows? I mean, right now there's no way to sign in at the site. So even though I signed up for it, I can't sign in at the site, so I can't look at any materials that are, maybe available. They also say they have support for organizations, so I signed up the OPCUG to see what information I would get. I have heard nothing from them. And all I've seen is this one email on December 7th, which announced this 10-episode security series, which turned out to be really good. I just hope that they do more. But at least for now, I would say take advantage of this. Because it's on YouTube, I don't think it'll disappear even if the Glue Society themselves disappears. It should remain available, I would think, on the YouTube site. So check it out and check out their website for new material as it maybe becomes available.
Hey, Chris, are you sure it's not a scam and they're just trying to get people's email addresses?
I sort of wondered a little bit about that, and I don't think so. I really don't. I think it's legit. It's just that I suspect that they've had trouble getting funding to do some of the aspirational things that they want to do. I haven't gotten spam specifically because of that, I don't think. My spam didn't go up when I all of a sudden signed up for them. I don't know. And they did put out this one series that was quite professionally done, and I'm sure it cost them a fair amount to put this together in terms of time and resources and so forth. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure to create that length of time of videos would take a lot of time and effort, I would think.
Yeah, and as I said, it was well done. It was well produced. The information was well researched. A lot of good links to other resources that people can get access to, and so forth. So, really, really good set of videos. If you know anybody, friends or neighbors who are always having their computer compromised or whatever, I'll pass on that link to let them take a look at these. They are at a level that a basic computer user should be able to take advantage of the information that's in there.
Yeah, Natalie just posted that episode 1 has Telus listed as the sponsor.
Yeah.
I'm talking about things that are quite well done. You want to cover this, Chris?
Oh, sure, yeah. We do have a Fraud Watch page on our website. And so this was started by Lawrence. And it hasn't had a lot of activity on it lately, but we try to put up information on there that the latest scams that are out there, somebody trying to part people from their money and so forth, how to watch out for it, how to guard yourself, how to prevent it, how to identify, you know, what's going on in the world of fraud at this point in time. And so check out our webpage. If you want to contribute to it, there's an email link on that page where you can contribute information, and we'll get it posted up onto the site for the benefit of the members. And this is yours, Alan. I'll let you cover it.
Oh, yeah, and the other thing that's on that webpage is a whole bunch of links to external websites that deal with various types of scams and how to avoid them and so forth. Yeah, there were two very recent scams in the news. The first one was a gift card scam, and it's pretty relevant to Christmas time. This is basically where people were going into stores and buying a gift card for one company, and then when the thing gets scanned, it turns out the scanner is looking at a different company. So if people go through with the transaction, they buy the card, load the card with money, but the money gets loaded onto a completely different card. And, of course, somebody else has got hold of that completely different card. So the barcode is actually a sticker which is stuck over the legitimate barcode. And when they load that barcode, the money ends up on the scammer's card. So just be careful when you're buying gift cards for people, make sure that the barcode is putting the money where you intend it to go. And then the second one was, I'm sure this is an old scam, but it's reared its head again locally, and especially in Ontario. Basically, somebody calls up and says, you know, Grandma, I need your help. I mean, I've been arrested, I'm in jail, and I need you to wire money. And Grandma, of course, says, is that you, little Johnny? Oh, yes, it's me, Grandma, I'm in big trouble. Well, of course, if you say, you know, is that you, X, Y, and Z, you can be guaranteed that the scammer is going to say, oh, yes, it's me, X, Y, and Z. And so the thing to do is not do that, clearly. And certainly, you know, don't go buy gift cards for scammers, and don't wire money to people that you don't know. Basically, hang up, call your grandchild or their parents and find out what is going on. And clearly, most of the time, you'll find out that the child is at home or out drinking with its friends. Okay, so Natalie says the grandparent scam has been around for a long time and well publicized, but so many people are still being scammed by it. And how true for all of these silly scams that people fall for all of the time. And so if you come across anything like that, Just take note that typically they try and panic you. Things have got to be done right now. Don't tell anybody else. And those are great big red flags that something's wrong. So check with somebody else before you send anybody any money. That's the best thing to do, I think.
Allison just noted in the chat that her coworker's parents just lost quite a bit of money from the grandparent scam. So it's happening, people. You have to be careful.
And the other one is the Microsoft tech scam.
Yeah.
There's always somebody. You've got a virus on your computer, and if you send them money, they'll fix it for you. They'll fix it for you, all right. Okay, let's move along. You can go check the Fraud Watch page, and all the horror stories are there. A few weeks ago, Chris was talking about how to track down what was going on when Windows was popping up messages that you couldn't access various devices. And I just had that happen to me recently. I couldn't eject a USB drive. So I followed Chris's sage advice, and I fired up Lock Hunter and gave it the drive letter for the USB drive that had the problem, and found that I had the problem was that migrationservice.exe was locking the USB drive. And it turns out that migrationservices.exe belongs to Samsung Magician, which is it's a utility to look at solid state drives and tell you statistics about them and how healthy they are and that kind of thing. And I've been using, I don't use Samsung Magician very often. I use it occasionally. And now and again it will want me to update it, and I do so. But I've never had this problem previously. So I started looking for migrationservice.exe. So I used my own advice and went to the settings and the apps page. I couldn't find Samsung Magician or anything down here, but what I did find was this guy at the bottom of the page here, which clearly is in some kind of Asian likely script. I have no idea how you find that program in File Explorer, but I did look up on the web, and it turned out that this is clearly some kind of Korean multiple character thingamajig. It's some of these little squiggles are Korean alphabetic characters, and somehow they're being combined here to make words or something. So this is some kind of Korean program, and of course Samsung is a Korean company, so I'm thinking this is all related. Anyway, I couldn't find how to get rid of migration services easily, couldn't disable it. So I looked up on the web, and people were complaining, and they were saying that it's related to Samsung Magician 7, and this data migration app, which is what migration services do, it's meant to copy files from one drive to another, it was added in version 7 in September. So clearly a recent update that I've made has given me a problem on my system. A couple of suggested fixes. One said go into the services.msc utility and set this program so that the startup was manual and reboot, or what I was going to try was trying to disable it. And somebody else basically downgraded and went back to version 6. That's clearly another option. So I had to look around, and it turned out my installed version was 7.20. So clearly that's going to be have the problem. But when I went to Control Panel and looked at the uninstall page and listed all the installed apps, of course, there's no data migration, there's no migration service, So I wasn't able to uninstall that particular program. The program is part of Samsung Magician. So if I go to the services.msc, which is a Microsoft Services utility, and I disable Samsung Magician, it turns out it has absolutely no effect, which is really bizarre. It has no effect on Samsung Magician. And in fact, if you go to Samsung Magician and look at the main page, in the settings area, there's this thing, this checkbox here, which says, run Magician at Windows startup. So you would think that if you uncheck that, then Magician would not start when Windows boots up. And you'd be wrong, because Magician does start when Windows boots up, even when this thing is turned off. So this program is a real pain. It just won't do anything reasonably. So it turns out there's a sledgehammer solution. And if you go to the control panel and look at the installed apps, you will find, I do find, Samsung Magician. So clearly I can just select it and then uninstall the whole program. And that's sure enough, once the program has been uninstalled, then it doesn't come back to, it doesn't come back to haunt me. It's not installed. It isn't going to load when Windows boots. So that solves that problem. However, the other option is the toffee hammer approach, and that's that guy's suggestion of look in the archive and find the older version which I had installed, which was version 6.3, and basically install that, which when I do that, then it turns out I can run this older version of Samsung Magician. It gives me all of the information that I ever need to know. It also, from time to time, will pop up a message and say that a new version is available. And, of course, that new version is going to be 7.20, whatever I had before. So, clearly, I'm not going to do that, at least until they release version 7.4 or 8.0 or something, which I will try and see if they've solved the problem. But certainly, going back to the old version, that solves my problem, because when I try and uninstall, when I try and eject my USB drive, it now ejects correctly as it's supposed to do. So things kind of work for me as designed. So all that to say, if you have a problem with Samsung Magician, there are ways around it.
Natalie has a comment in the chat. Samsung has many things that are blocked from user control. I called to complain about apps on Samsung smartphone. The tech guy suggested simply not opening some apps so they wouldn't be active. That's no guarantee that that's the case either, because I think some of them will open up in the background regardless. He says, aside from that, you're stuck with them. And certainly on the phone side of things, I think most manufacturers, with probably notable exception of Google on their Pixel phones, which are pretty clean. Most phone manufacturers load up their phones with all kinds of crap that most people have no need for but can't get rid of.
And that's especially true of Samsung, Natalie. I have a Samsung phone. It's got all kinds of system apps which I'm not allowed to uninstall. Well, that's not true, actually. Some of the Samsung apps you can actually uninstall. Some of them you can disable,
yeah.
But there's a whole bunch that you can't do anything about, and it's a real pain. Yeah. So the only thing you can do is load a custom ROM and get rid of Samsung's version of Android.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. If you go to YouTube and type in your particular model of Samsung phone, there's a wealth of videos in there on how to get rid of some of this stuff, how to tune your phone, how you know the best apps to use on your phone. Hours worth of stuff. I just got a newer Samsung phone to replace my old one, and I've probably downloaded about 5 hours worth of YouTube videos on how to get the most out of it, and I haven't had a chance to look at them yet, but that gives all sorts of options for getting the most from your phone, getting rid of some of these unwanted apps, and otherwise getting the most from again from your phone.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Natalie says she's going to check that out. Okay, Chris. So Chris is next up with a share.
Yeah, so this is just a hint on how you can actually get quicker restarts after you do an update to Windows and the operating system. So here's just a screenshot that is a typical sort of thing that will happen if you go to settings, update, or sorry, I forget what the Windows update, which is under security section off of the main screen. And so you might go there, you might see that, oh, okay, so there's some updates and it's downloading those updates. And then next, after all of the downloads have happened, you might see a button that says install now, and all of the updates that you have pending there are showing as pending install. And basically, until you click on the install now, they might sit there for a while. They might actually start installing by themselves at some point as well. But if you're sitting there watching, you'll have that install now button. And next. And then here's an example where I was, you know, a bunch of them got installed, and then I'm down to the last two. So one of them says it's installing and it's at 12%, and the other one says pending install. So there's still one that is not even started its install. So next. So if we pick it up from there, you know, we have that where we have the one that's installing. It's at 12% and the other one is pending. So it'll install after the other one, presumably. Next. And then finally, you get to the point where you get a button popping up saying restart now. And so you'll also get a toast pop-up down in the system tray, which also tells you that your device is ready to restart to, you know, go ahead and take care of all of this. Next. But the interesting thing here is that are we really ready for a restart? Because the screen still shows it's got a pending restart on one of them, but the other one, it says it's installing and it's at 0%. So are we really ready to do the restart or not if it's still in the middle of restarting? So next. So what's going on here? So once you get that pop-up, the important thing is, I guess, that it is actually safe to go ahead and click on that and restart your computer. Next. The updates that have not yet completed, they will complete during the reboot process of your computer. Next. Why is this not good? Well, that install that was in progress when that pop-up came up saying restart now and you click on it, that could take a considerable amount of time for that particular item to be installed. Might take 10, 15, 20 minutes. Who knows how long to complete the updates? And the important thing is this is happening during the reboot process. So you can't use your computer during that restart process. So next. So the bottom line on this, I think, is that rather than clicking on that restart now button as soon as you see it pop up, next, wait until you actually get it that it, you know, all of the updates that are still to be completed are saying pending restart. Nothing more can happen on those updates until you actually restart your computer. But you might wait 10 or 15 minutes before that actually pops up, so you can be using your computer during that period of time. Next. So again, the last update, which I did on my computer, which was just a few days ago, might have been last week, it took 15 minutes to get from the first screen where it was saying that 0% on the installing of that cumulative update for Windows 10 until it got to the point where it actually said pending restart. It actually took 15 minutes to get from one screen to the next screen. So if I had clicked on that restart now as soon as I saw it, it would have rebooted my computer, would have gone ahead and done that install, and I wouldn't have been able to use my computer for the 15 minutes that it actually took to get that installed. Next. So the final line on it, if you get that pop-up message with the button saying restart now, even if you're not in the settings app for Windows Update, you might get the toast notification down in the system tray saying, oh, restart now to install your updates. Actually go to Settings, Update and Security, Windows Update, And if any of the updates show it still as being installing, wait for it to get to the point where it says pending restart for everything that's there before you actually click on the restart now, and then you'll get a faster period of time where you can't actually use your computer.
So you got a couple of comments in the chat window. Good to know. Very useful. And I like Karen's cool tip. It will save so much time. Wait, drives me crazy.
Yeah. Don't we all love looking at a blank screen? Windows is now applying your updates, and it's sitting there for 15 minutes or longer while it does that. It drives me nuts too.
Okay, right. So we're out of prepared material, more or less. So we're kind of into the last 20. So if anybody has any questions or comments or things that you'd like to share, now is the time to put them in the chat window or open your microphone and talk to us or whatever. But in the meantime, I have a question. I'm going to go back to that question of, Chris and I would really like to know what you would like to know. And so what aspects of computers would be really good topics for monthly meetings, for example? We have some meetings scheduled already, but it's always good to know the kind of topics that people would like to hear about in our regular monthly meetings. And exactly the same thing goes for questions to be answered and things to be shared at Q&A. And one of the things that came up recently was a suggestion that a monthly meeting program on artificial intelligence would be really neat. So I'm starting this wish list here of things, topics, and questions. So I'm hoping people are going to chip in with stuff that's of interest. And in terms of artificial intelligence, first of all, how many people would be interested in a program on artificial intelligence? And should it be something fairly general? Or is there a specific aspect of AI that people would be interested in? Does anybody know who we could get to speak on the topic? I don't think anybody on the board has any particular expertise on artificial intelligence. And I don't think we know who we might approach to do so. Now, the other thought was, are there other ways that we could discuss or we could have a meeting about artificial intelligence without actually having a main speaker? Could we have mini presentations by a bunch of different members on things that they're interested in? Could we find a video that we could show in a public forum like this without copyright concerns and then have a discussion afterwards? So the whole bunch of things that are of interest to us. So I'm gonna leave the question open, and I don't know that we're getting anything on the chat window, Chris, but
yeah,
people want to add things to the chat or talk to us on the mics, now's the time, and I will make notes.
Yeah, Karen had a thing. She said she has a question about Google Pixel and getting notifications when connected to Bluetooth in car. So I guess that sounds like a good one for sure. We'd probably want a little bit more details about exactly what it is that is currently happening or not happening. And then maybe we can delve into that a little bit deeper and see if we can find a solution to it. And then Carol says she's interested in saving photos and getting rid of duplicates. We've talked a bit about that in the past. We could revisit that for sure, because I know that that's something that a lot of people struggle with, having duplicate photos or not knowing where your photos are in some cases on your computer. So we could aim to do something a little bit more on that. Bill did have a comment, photo duplicate remover at the Play Store for Android. There are a number of Windows apps that are specifically designed around duplicate photo removal. Some of them actually will look at minor edits to photos as well and consider them to be similar enough that they'll flag it, say that this looks like it's the same photo, and then you have to decide that, oh yeah, okay, I touched up this or I made this modification, so I'll keep this version of it.
Chris?
Yep.
If I could just add to, sometimes when people ask about or talk about photo duplicates, they don't just mean on their desktop. They mean they've got a copy on the cloud, they've got a copy on their iPhone, they got a copy on their desktop.
It's yes.
Organized. So that could be another layer.
Yep. Yeah. True. True. That. Yeah. It does come down to a point of, do you have too many copies around all over the place? Yeah. Yeah. That'd be good. So, Alan, add that to the notes. Natalie says, under basics, default settings on smartphones for pictures, file size, flash settings, etc. When there was an update, everything got changed, and I can't find where the settings moved to. Yeah, that's always a challenge. I struggle a little bit with smartphones where manufacturers are loath to have any sort of documentation on how their apps actually work. And when they come out with a new version of the app, of course, things change all over the place, and it can be a real struggle to find where settings are moved or whether they got deleted, what new settings there are in there. It can be a challenge for sure. Karen has...
It's not just manufacturers, Chris. I think Android developers in particular have a penchant for not producing any documentation at any time for anything.
Yeah, that's true. And Karen has computer basics lessons on Total Commander. actually, Bob Walker and I have in the works that we're going to put together a presentation. It'll be either a Q&A or it might be more of a main meeting topic on Total Commander. We're going to tag team on this. It looks currently that it's going to be bigger than we would want for Q&A and smaller than we would want for a main meeting topic. So we're struggling a little bit with how best to handle that. Bob, have you had further thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was thinking of doing a four or five parter at Q&A over several weeks. Or as you mentioned, pumping it up into a full meeting topic. We'll discuss that later over the next week or two and see where we go with that. I'm sort of putting together a topics list. And so far I've got the history of Total Commander, an introduction to basic functionality, another one on configuring it so you can do all the stuff, and then you'd offer to do something on some of the advanced features, and I'm trying to flesh that out a little bit and see where we go with that.
There's a comment by Natalie about getting a workaround for her resizing by downloading them to her PC and then resizing. Maybe you could give a short little slide on that program that app that you put onto my phone for sending resized photos.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Yeah.
That might be a handy one because I couldn't figure out how to do it on my new phone either. So it used to be really easy on my old phone, but the new one, you installed that little app, and I found it very useful.
Yeah, Alan, make a note on that for me and in your notes for resize on phone. Mm-hmm. For Natalie, for your benefit right now and anybody else who's struggling with how to do that.
I just can't remember the name. I don't have my phone next to me.
I've got it here, and I forget the name of it too.
I'll get it. Hang on.
Okay. Yeah, there's a free app that you can download that allows you to quite easily select a photo and then say you want to send it by email or by text or however you want to send it. And one of the options is to send it through this app.
It's called Reduced Light, L-I-T-E.
Right, Reduced Light.
Yeah.
Yeah. And send Reduced is the name of the app.
Oh, the name includes the send. Okay, I thought that was just instruction.
Yeah, no, it's actually send reduced. So if you go to the Google Play Store and search on send reduced free, that you may find that very useful. But we'll include that in whatever slides we put together on that particular topic as well. Because I found it to be a very, very handy app.
So it's called. You
could also get a Pixel or Pixel XL, because all the photos you upload from that and whatever size are stored for free by Google. So just transfer your photos over to the old Pixel or Pixel XL and upload them from there.
Yeah, but this is very useful when you want to send somebody a photo. Do you really want to send them, a 20 megabyte photo file by email or something like that? This app allows you to choose, I want to send it at, a maximum of 1024 resolution or a maximum of 300 resolution or whatever. And so it automates that process of downsizing it before you actually send the photo to somebody else.
It's just for a quick, when you're emailing either to yourself or someone else, and I wouldn't want to send them any other place or give links or what have you. Right from your phone to one person is very handy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for. Thank you.
Okay.
So it's called Send Reduced, Okay.
Yeah, Send Reduced Free, I think, is the version. So I presume if they have Send Reduced Free, they probably have a Send Reduced Pay for extra features, I guess.
Yeah, because when I do the Send on mine, anyway, when I do the Send Reduced Free, I do not get option of size. It picks. Whatever, either I've picked it originally, but there's no pop-up to say you want a particular size. So it's bare bones, but it's perfect size for just flipping something quickly.
You can actually go into the configuration of the app itself and choose the size that you want as a default.
Yeah, that must be what I did.
It looks like it might now be called Send Reduced Lite.
What I was saying. It's called Lite, L-I-T.
Okay. L-I-T, yeah. So that's in the Play Store. And, I've been quite happy with it.
Yeah.
It's got a 4.3 rating on 576 reviews. Quite useful.
I have a problem. In Chrome, I have a certain set of startup pages, but lately I've been getting twice as many startup pages. A duplication, the duplication of the first half. Has anybody else had this problem, and have they been able to fix it?
I've got a Chromebook, but I've never experienced that particular problem. I also find Chrome OS to be somewhat confusing, and I don't try to customize too much because I find it just, it's weird compared to Windows.
This is Chrome on Windows. It's not Chrome.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. I see. So you're getting multiple startup pages? Well,
multiple startup tabs.
Tabs. Did you try? There are options in Chrome to not have it open up any particular tabs at all, and I would try setting it to that and then setting it back to the one tab you want.
Oh, I usually start up with seven or eight tabs.
So that's, yeah, I know, but if you're getting more than you want now, I would turn it all off and then turn them back on one at a time to get the ones you want, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm just guessing.
I will try.
Yeah.
So, Chris and Bob, I had a thought for your Total Commander presentation. Maybe you could, if it's not long enough for a monthly meeting, maybe you could add on all those questions about photo duplicates and saving them and binding them and backing them up and so forth as an example.
You mean just combining two topics into one meeting?
Well, wouldn't some of those things, you could do it with Total Commander?
Not really.
The one that Alan demoed a year or so ago was better. The one that you use, Alan, for duplicates.
Yeah. A purpose-built app for finding duplicates is a lot better than Total Commander doesn't really look for duplicates at all, I don't think. It allows you to search for things, but not on duplicate basis or anything like that.
Okay, well, then, I mean, that again, that photo thing isn't long enough for a whole meeting, so maybe you could combine two topics.
Yeah, or as Bob thought, if we just did it as a multi-part series, so do it in, I'm not sure, five parts would be necessary, but if we limited it to, you know, 15 minutes at a time, we could cover off Total Commander pretty well, I think, in, you know, two or three meetings. Probably we could do that. And likewise with, you know, finding duplicate images, that could probably be, you know, limited to about 15 minutes would probably be covering that pretty well. So that would be good for a topic at Q&A, I would think.
I was wondering about the artificial intelligence. Rather than asking for a bunch of mini presentations, what do you think of the idea of just having sort of a set of either questions or comments or things that people have said on the internet and just having a discussion, like, what do you think of these, and send them out ahead of time so people can kind of think and then just weigh in during the meeting, have a kind of discussion period on artificial intelligence without necessarily formal presentations.
I'm sorry. Did you catch that, Alan? I was busy typing something.
I wrote it down. A discussion.
I'm used to being ignored by Chris. He only listens to me half the time anyway.
I wrote down a discussion of web postings on AI.
Well, not necessarily posting, but just questions you may pose, like, what do people think of this? Or have you heard of this? Or what's your reaction to this kind of article? Or blah, blah, blah. Rather than asking people to do a lot of little presentations where you might not get anybody coming forward.
Okay. Another topic here, Chris, how to sync browsers between computers and various devices.
Yeah, I saw that. That would be good. Personally, I haven't experienced any difficulties with it on mine. I do synchronize Chrome, and I think Edge is designed to be able to synchronize its settings quite well, Firefox as well. All of them basically are going to require that the browser be logged in to a particular user ID or Firefox account or Google account or whatever. But as long, my personal experience has been, as long as you are logged in the browser on all of the PCs using the same ID, then synchronizing the settings actually works pretty smoothly for me. If people have had problems with that, maybe there's need for some troubleshooting to be able to do that. But maybe we could go through the process of how to do it in all of the major browsers. So that would be a good topic for sure. We could spend 10 or 15 minutes talking about that, I would think.
Okay, Natalie's suggesting maybe divide up the pros and cons for artificial intelligence.
Yeah, pros and cons, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of potential in there.
Well, one of the cons was that artist who found all the pictures available for sale, which he hadn't actually painted, but they were his style and his signature was on the bottom.
Yeah. Linda happened to mention Snapseed as a good editor for phones and tablets. Certainly if anybody uses Snapseed and would like to put together a mini presentation on that, that would be really handy. I have heard very good things about Snapseed, although I am loath to do photo editing on a phone, but I guess there are other people who do.
Well, Stuart was actually the one that mentioned it first. I was just responding, so he may be familiar enough with the app to take us through it.
And there you go, Stu.
Phone or do they use a tablet? Because tablet would be easier, I would think.
But the app itself is probably the same thing, so, yeah.
Yeah, but the screen's much bigger on the tablet.
Yeah.
I'm only aware of Snapseed. I haven't used it. Apparently, it hasn't been supported for a couple of years now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah,
it's just considered stable and mature, and they haven't bothered to do anything with it because it is I think it's a Google app.
Yeah, it does seem to have a good reputation, and it did seem the most comprehensive one I could find when people were asking me for recommendations because I tend to just use my phone editor and then my main one on my desktop, but it seemed to be the best. So I do recommend it to people, even though I don't have personal experience with it.
I gave up on editors because I just tend to screw things up.
Karen mentioned she's interested in hearing about various apps people are finding, are using on their phones and find useful. I would highly encourage anybody, if you've installed an extra app onto your phone and you find it really useful and are willing to put together a mini presentation on it, just talking about what you find useful, what you find annoying, some of the reasons that drove you to using that app, I think it'd be really good to share that information with other people.
And don't hesitate to go back into the archives of Q&A because Tom and Stu and I have at least have all put together mini presentations on different smartphone apps.
Yep. Carol mentions that.
I don't recall.
Yeah, Carol mentions she has a friend who does beautiful pictures with just her phone and Snapseed. Maybe she can get her to talk. That would be wonderful. If she's not a member, she could become a member, too, and get a two-for-one special right now. So I think we're at the witching hour, and so we got a lot of good ideas. Keep the ideas coming in. If you have further ideas about stuff you think would be really good to cover off a Q&A or general meeting topics, especially if you have a presenter that you could line up for it, that would be really wonderful. Send it into suggestion box at opcug.ca.
Okay, and just before everybody disappears, let me just reinforce what we were talking about at the start of the meeting. The board has voted to extend memberships by a year. So if you're currently a member of OPCUG, you will not receive a renewal notice. And don't send us any money, because then we have to refund it to you. So if you're a member of OPCUG right now, your membership's going to be extended automatically by an additional year from whenever it expires. And if you're not a member, if you join now, or at least before March the 31st, and our regular annual membership fee of $20 will apply, but because you're joining now and you will be a member as of March the 31st, your membership will be extended by a year. So effectively, you're receiving 2 years of membership for the price of one. So $10 a year for as many QAs and as many meetings and as many messages as you want to put on the forum, all for one low price. And the final thing I think we have as a notice is, some of you may or may not know that Lawrence is not going to continue on the club's board of directors. And Lawrence was, looking at our monthly meeting program and mostly taking care of publicity. So we're looking for somebody who would like to do one or the other or both of those things. So if you're interested in joining the board, the election is at the AGM in February, but nominations close at the end of the year. So send your wishes to Bob Harris, who's our election chair.
And I would like to extend my thanks. He's not on the call tonight, but to Lawrence, he did a great job in the upcoming newsletter. I have my president's report, and I have a paragraph that details a lot of the work that Lawrence put into the helping of the running of the OPCUG over the last few years. So my thanks to Lawrence for all that he has provided for all of us.
Yeah. And as Chris mentioned, we will have a Q&A next week, which will be the 28th. So again, your questions and shares. And now, if you have specific suggestions for monthly meeting topics or more topics that we can discuss at Q&A, just send them along to suggestion box. And other than that, on behalf of Chris and I and the rest of the board of directors, we hope everybody has a really Merry Christmas and we don't get too much snow in the next couple of days. So see you next week, everyone. Have a great Christmas.
Thanks a lot, folks. Merry Christmas. See you next week.
Merry Christmas to all.
And to all a good night.
Good night.